as I think about the word dignity, the character of Atticus Finch from the 1962 classic movie To Kill a Mockingbird comes to mind. My favorite scene is near the very end. Throughout the film, we're teased and frightened by the character of Boo Radley. He's almost a mythical legend to Jeb and Scout Atticus's children. They believe he's not quite right. Perhaps he's developmentally delayed or mentally ill. As the audience, we're never really quite sure. The children imagine him to be dangerous, even hideous. Although they've never seen him, rumors abound in the neighborhood that he eats squirrels that he catches with his bare hands, and that he comes out at night to prowl the neighborhood. Atticus's daughter and son are attacked on the way home from a school performance. As they walk in the dark, Scout hears footsteps as if someone is following them. Suddenly there's a scuffle, and in the darkness she's knocked to the ground. She hears her brother's muffled shouts, and he tells her to run. She makes it home, but it's not until later that we discover that a certain someone has come to their rescue. It turns out that Boo Radley saw the attack. Boo steps in and he stabs the attacker and he carries Jeb home. As Scout goes in to see her wounded brother, we hear a tiny gasp. And then suddenly she says, "Hey, Boo." As the camera pans back, we see a very pale and frightened Boo Radley sitting in Jeb's room. She's not a monster. Perhaps shy and frightened, but he's just a regular man. Atticus comes in the room with a wonderful casualness, and he says, "Jean Louise, I'd like you to meet Mr. Arthur Radley." Atticus addresses him as Mr. Arthur Radley, not Boo, as he's known, but his full name. The very character that we've been fearing throughout the movie turns out to be a quiet and gentle man, and Atticus immediately addresses him with great dignity. Scout, following her father's lead, takes Boo's hand, and she invites him to come and sit on the porch. It's been a pretty exciting and frightening evening. I suspect she's been overwhelmed by everything that's been going on, and perhaps she feels Boo feels the same way. She accepts him fully and welcomes him into what she's experiencing. The two go out and sit on the porch, swing next to one another, while they try to make sense of the evening. I wonder, what if George Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin would have approached each other in this way? "Hello, I'm George. I live in this area. We haven't met yet." And Trayvon might have said, "I'm new here. We haven't met yet. I'm staying with my dad's fiance." But instead, we had two men who disregarded each other without dignity, and they did not see each other as individuals, but instead of members of a group that they feared. I have no idea what really played out that evening, and I suspect that we may never know. But it's clear that this kind of situation where people let fear and ignorance lead them happens much too often. And I hate to say it, but it even happens inside of these walls. As Unitarians, we hold within our seven principles that we believe in the inherent worth and dignity of each individual. UU theologian Reverend Forrest Church says that this means that we believe in the worth and dignity of each human being, that all people on earth have equal claim to life and liberty and justice, and no ideal or philosophy or idea is superior to any single human life. So what does that mean? In the privileged society that most of us come from, it seems pretty simple that we should treat one another as we hope others to treat us, the golden rule. But the more I thought about it, the more I realized, though we can say that and hope to believe it, In mere seconds, I know that I can struggle with that if I feel that my dignity's been violated. My instincts tell me to either flee or retaliate. And as a society, we've dug into our camps of red or blue states, liberal or conservative, Fox or MSN, believer or non-believer, male or female, straight or gay. And we push back on one another with force and fear. The other is a threat or just plain wrong. Or for whatever reason, we seem to struggle to accept one another with open hearts. Instead, we tend to lump one another into groups, and we disregard them, or worse yet, we just yell louder. Fellowship member Les Gunther collects interesting tidbits of articles and newsletters and comics that he sends my way for consideration. I get an envelope from Les almost every week with things that he finds interesting. Last week, I found a letter from Republican House Speaker John Boehner. It came from the Republican Party asking for money to fight the enormous political machine that President Obama had created and that was destroying America. It was fiercely written. It was filled with what I felt were lies about the Obama's plan for health care and education and the economy. It accused the president and the Democratic Party of purposely trying to destroy our great nation. I was angry and upset, and I was alarmed that people were getting these kind of things in the mail. And as I continued to look through the envelope, I came across another letter. This was from the Democratic Party, calling for support and money to fight the terrible political machine that Republican Scott Walker and his party created. They claimed they were destroying families, education, and the economy. It too held fierce language that spewed fear and loathing of the other party. Seeing these two letters side by side was a bit unnerving. I thought my side had more character. I saw that my side was just the same as the other side. Is this really what we resorted to? I confess, even as a minister, I can struggle when I'm with someone who is very politically or religiously conservative. I know I'm supposed to be loving and caring, but I'm still human. I find myself somehow wanting to change how they see the world. I find I want to dismiss what they hold to be true, and I get caught up in an ideology, and I see them less as an individual. I know I've heard many folks in this congregation dismiss or even snicker at the beliefs of conservative Christians, and this bothers me. It bothers me because sometimes I find myself in that camp. And it bothers me because I feel it goes against everything we stand for as Unitarians. If we say we believe in the inherent worth and dignity of each individual, then that means Rush Limbaugh. That means Michelle Bachmann, Scott Walker, and other right-leaning conservatives. Does this mean I have to respect them and the tactics that they use? No. But it does mean that I need to consider that there's a multitude of folks that these people speak for, and that there is something there that needs to be heard. That feels almost impossible at times, and yet that's what I think we're called to do as members of this congregation and as members of a greater community. Miami Herald columnist Leonard Pitts examined the George Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin case in his latest column. He mentioned how President Obama acknowledged that as an African-American man, Trayvon Martin could have been him. After which, the conservative media jumped in and wondered out loud if this meant that Obama smoked pot and did a little blow. For Pitts, this attempt at humor only demonstrated the overall belief that we all know that black men are criminal. Young black men as a whole, not just Trayvon Martin. Pitt states that the first casualty of racism, of any ism for that matter, the first casualty is individuality. We begin to see the group as a whole, defined only by their stereotypes. And when we do that, we take away the individual's right to be themselves, the right to an equal claim to live, the right to be treated with inherent worth and dignity. As UUs, we fight for social justice, and we dream of a world where we will all be considered equal, no matter our race or sexual orientation or our religious understanding. And yet I know inside these walls, we violate the dignity of political conservatives and conservative Christians every time we minimize or disregard their faith or ideals. So I want you to know that I come into this humbly. Personally, I've been looking for ways in which I can come to terms with this myself. And I found some useful resources in the work of Dr. Donna Hicks. Hicks is a professor at Harvard who has been studying dignity during the last 15 years. She's a conflict resolution specialist. She's worked as a facilitator in discussions between countries that are either at war or in dispute. And through years and years of research, after hearing people's stories and working towards resolution, she's developed a dignity model, an approach to understanding the primary role that dignity plays in our lives and in our relationships. She wonders, what would life be like if we all became agents of dignity? What would it be like if our inherent dignity were recognized on a daily basis in each and every moment, instead of just once in a while? First, we need to be clear about the differences between respect and dignity. She feels that respect is something you earn throughout your life, through the work that you do, the promises that you keep, and the type of person that you are when you're with others. Dignity, she believes, is a birthright, something we're born with. Because we exist, we deserve to be treated with dignity. And if this is true, then that's something we're called to show everyone, not just the people we like. She found that as she began to work in conflict resolution, that when she brought leaders of nations in to talk with one another about their conflicts, they consistently fell into finger-pointing and blaming. But when she began to focus her discussions on dignity, things changed. She asked the leaders to share a time when they felt their dignity was violated. And they all had a story to share. Their stories were universal. Each of them understood what it felt like to have their dignity violated by not being heard, by being dismissed, by being shut out. In this common understanding, they began to hear and see each other fully. What seems to be of utmost importance to humans is how we feel about who we are. We long to look good in the eyes of others, to feel good about ourselves, and to be worthy of others' care and attention. We have a universal longing for dignity, the feeling of inherent value and worth. When we feel worthy, we feel content. Yet, just as quickly, our dignity can be violated in a blink of an eye. We are just as vulnerable to feeling unworthy as we are to feeling worthy. The feeling of loss is at the heart of human vulnerability. Loss of dignity, loss of connection to others, and even loss of life. We immediately withdraw from people who harm us, even if physically we remain together. Openness is replaced by resentment. We lose the freedom to be together without fear or being judged. How often have you experienced being dismissed or pushed out of a group or a decision at work or with friends? We find ourselves pulling away if this continues to happen, sharing less, feeling resentful. We feel injuries to our dignity at the core of our being. They can become a threat to the very essence of who we are. and the after effects of dignity violations are shame and suffering that color the quality of our daily lives. Hicks believes that we're all dignity violators as well as victims of dignity violations. She's developed 10 essential elements of dignity. Now I know 10 things is a lot to remember, and as a middle-aged woman, I'm lucky if I can remember my own last name. So if you're interested, I have copies of the 10 elements sitting out at the welcome table. Feel free to pick one up if you'd like. Hicks begins with the acceptance of others' identity. What if we approached each other as neither inferior or superior to ourselves? Now that sounds easy to say, but what happens when someone says, "I love Sean Hannity"? Immediately we might make a judgment. And yet Hicks says, stop and accept this person as neither inferior or superior to you. Next is inclusion. Make others feel like they belong. George Zimmerman did not make Trayvon Martin feel like he was welcomed in his neighborhood. How might that exchange have been different if Zimmerman would have made Martin feel like he belonged? Next, we need to feel safe. And Marty talked about that in her opening words. The sense of feeling safe with who we are, safe from physical harm, and safe from being humiliated for what we hold and believe. Scout made Boo Radley feel safe by taking his hand and sitting with him on the porch. Now, I've heard from some of our Christian UUs that they often keep their beliefs of Jesus Christ to themselves. I wonder if they feel safe to talk openly about Jesus without fear of being disregarded. Instead, what if we acknowledge each other by giving each other our full attention? What if we listen fully and validate each other's concerns and beliefs instead of disregarding them? The simple act of saying, "Tell me more," shifts the conversation dramatically. Be fair. Treat people justly with equality and without discrimination. I think that's something we truly believe in here. But here's my favorite. Offer the benefit of the doubt. Expect others to be trustworthy. Hicks encourages us to start with the premise that others have good motives and integrity. This has helped me a lot because if I give you the benefit of the doubt that what I tell you is true for me, then I will have no choice but to do the same for you. When doing this, I've learned that many of my conservative friends and family have the same desires for good jobs, good schools, and safe communities. It's important that we believe what other people think matters. Give them the chance to explain and express their views and actively listen in order to understand them. Just imagine how pro-life, pro-choice protests might be different if both parties tried to listen to each other instead of shouting each other down. Then encourage independence. Invite others to act on their own behalf so they feel in control of their lives and experience. And lastly, Hicks calls for accountability. Take responsibility for your own actions. If you have violated someone else's dignity, acknowledge it and take responsibility and make amends. Hicks feels that these elements validate and name experiences that occur when we engage with others. If these elements are disregarded, we can actually see why we feel badly after an interaction. Knowing these elements help us to understand the source of negativity that could lead to the feeling of a dignity violation. Naming the feeling or the violation can bring relief. It can also help us to connect with one another and create healing. It helps us to recognize that nothing is wrong with us, but that something wrong occurred to us. So how can we use this power of dignity to restore relationships and promote reconciliation? When we find ourselves up against someone who we are in conflict with, What if we agree to sit down together and admit that each are worthy of one another's time and attention? How often have you come up against someone who you know thinks very opposite of you, and you quickly excuse yourself or change the subject? Sit and listen to each other without interruption or without trying to challenge their story. Listen to one another to seek understanding, not to change opinions. And then acknowledge and recognize what the other has experienced. Honor and acknowledge each other's integrity. Once we really recognize and acknowledge another person's experience, we can no longer dehumanize them. We can no longer exclude them. The biggest lesson Hicks has learned from his encounter is that vulnerability is where the power lies. Magic happens when we expose the truth about ourselves and others, and we are ultimately set free by it. I just preached on vulnerability 2 weeks ago, and I was surprised to see how directly related to dignity it was. Echoing that sermon, it's clear to me that our instincts fool us into thinking that deception and cover-up are a good strategy for self-preservation. Choosing to make ourselves vulnerable when we feel threatened feels at times impossible. But when we recognize and acknowledge each other's experiences, we actually find connection. One of the greatest demonstrations of human dignity that we have all seen was when Nelson Mandela walked out of prison after 27 and a half years of confinement by the apartheid government of South Africa. And he announced that he had no anger in his heart toward white people. Mandela said, "I know that people expect me to harbor anger towards whites, but I had none. In prison, my anger towards whites decreased, but my hatred for the system grew. I wanted South Africa to see that I loved my enemies, even while I hated the system that turned us against one another." Mandela went on to say that prison and the authorities conspired to rob each man of his dignity. In and of itself, that assured me that I would survive. For any man that tries to rob me of my dignity will lose, because I will not part with it at any price or under any pressure. Because of his own sense of value and worth, and it was so deeply ingrained, he never lost sight of his own inherent worth and dignity. And in turn, he never lost sight of others' inherent worth and dignity, no matter how badly he was treated. It was humanity itself that he respected, not just his own, but every human being. This is what it means to believe in inherent worth and dignity of all individuals, to believe in the dignity of all people, even the ones we have difficulty with, especially the ones we have difficulty with. So what if next time we find ourselves confronted with someone whose ideals and beliefs are opposite of ours, instead of trying to change them or disregard them, what if we pause and instead saw them as individuals instead of ideologies? What if we saw their inherent worth and dignity and believed what they held to be true for them? Perhaps like Atticus Finch in To Kill a Mockingbird, we regard them for who they are, and we welcome them in with dignity. Perhaps we take their hand like Scout did to Boo Radley, and we invite them to come and sit on the porch with us, and we ask them to tell us more. We might see that we are all really coming from the very same place, maybe just from different directions. We're neither good nor bad. Just individuals who have a story to tell, and we each deserve to be heard. May it be so.